Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about, most of us really want to reach optimum levels of health and wellness. We want to feel better, live long, and enjoy life even more. And that's what I attempt to bring you on each of the Healthy Alternative shows. My guest I'm going to be interviewing in a little while is Marcia Glidden. Marcia is a master teaching artist with Elders Share the Art. It's based in Brooklyn, New York. She's taught drama, puppetry, intergenerational art to students of all ages and abilities in schools and community-based settings since 1974. Her passion is connecting generations and cultures and communities through the art of storytelling and performance, and she's been doing this for 20 years. She's a theater performer and director, and she also received the 2012 Flamekeeper Meritorious Service Award for creativity, leadership, and outstanding contributions to the lives of older people. We're going to be talking to Marcia about the concept of this intergenerational community by using the arts and how it really helps both kids and elders have healthier, more enjoyable lives. We're going to be talking to her in just a couple of minutes. Every week, I like to talk to you about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you. What I want to talk about is the American Dietetic Association. They register dietitians that are supposed to be giving us nutritional advice. Sounds good, except you need to look a little deeper because Coca-Cola has now been given certification to teach a course on how safe the Coca-Cola company's ingredients are. And what they did is they created the Coca-Cola Company Beverage Institute for Health and Wellness. And they're aiming to educate dietitians about what is called urban myths about food safety. What are these urban myths? That fluoride, sugar, artificial colors are okay to have. That there shouldn't be any concern among parents about their children's health from this. Keep in mind, Coca-Cola is in the business of selling liquid sugar that's flavored with artificial sweeteners. And for them to dissuade us by having a course teaching dietitians what is quote-unquote myths-busting is real questionable. And keep in mind, this course gives dietitians continuing professional education credits. So it's real questionable behavior by the American Dietetic Association taking a course like that and giving credit for it and training their dietitians to be teaching people about that. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can go to teplitz.com and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I do a free monthly e-newsletter called The Teplitz Report. It's health, nutrition, wellness oriented, and it's showing you things that are, and teaching you things, and sharing with you things that are different than what I put on Healthy Alternatives. If you want to sign up for that, go to teplitz.com, and you'll see the About Home button, and just click there, and you'll be able to sign up on the drop-down menu. Every week, I also like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough. It's the latest information, newest discoveries about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about comes from research put together and research being done by an organization called Grassroots Health. They've been developing and substantiating research to support the use of vitamin D as a prevention strategy against diseases like cancer. There was a study done by Dr. Cedric Garland, University of San Diego Medical School and Morris Cancer Center, that found that the risk of breast cancer could be cut by 50% if people had vitamin D levels about 40 to 50 nanograms per milliliter. That's a measurement of how much is in your system. And 50 to 70 is considered optimum now. Above 70, they're finding from the research, can really help stop cancers to the point that there are 16 types of cancers at this time that can be prevented by using vitamin D. As an example, there was a study by Joan Lapp out of Creighton University. They had a group of 1,100 postmenopausal women who started out with no cancer. There was a control group also. One group got oral vitamin D and calcium, and the other got the placebo. At the end of 4 years, there was a 77% difference in cancer incidence between those who had the vitamin D and calcium. The folks who did not, who were taking placebo, they had a 77% higher level of cancer. You need to realize that there have been more than 200 epidemiological studies linking cancer to certain cancers. As an example, some of the research has shown around 600,000 cases of breast and colorectal cancer could be prevented each year if vitamin D levels among populations worldwide were increased. Some of the other cancers that it can help prevent are pancreatic, lung, ovarian, prostate, and skin cancer. Another large-scale, randomized, placebo-controlled study on D found that the D can cut overall cancer risk by as much as 60%, to the extent that now the Canadian Cancer Society has actually begun endorsing the vitamin as a cancer preventive therapy. So we're looking at something that is very powerful. How much should you be taking of vitamin D? And it's vitamin D3 that you want to be taking. And it seems that most adults need around 8,000 IUs of vitamin D in order to get their serum level into the optimum ranges. If you got cancer, you want to increase that quite a bit more. The only way you can find out your level, though, is you got to have a blood test done. So go get one done. When I had one done a number of years ago, I was at the level of 12. Remember we're saying 50 to 70? I was at the level of 12 NGs per liter. And it took a while, but now I have now hit above 70 is what I'm at now. So you can raise your levels, but you got to use blood tests to determine how you're doing for that. Before I bring on my guest, Marcia Glidden, I'd like to talk to you about a book I've done called Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. This is a book full of techniques and approaches you can use immediately to handle those stresses you experience. It has techniques that show you how to meditate, and I view that as one of the real primary ways of reducing stress. It has some yoga techniques in there. It has breathing. It has nutrition. It has shiatsu. It has a whole range of things that you can use immediately to take charge of those stresses in your life. You can locate the book at Amazon, or you can also go on my website at teplitz.com. You'll see the products button. Click there and go into books, and you can order it.
My guest today is Marcia Glidden. She's a a master teaching artist with the Elders Share the Arts group. It's based in Brooklyn, New York. She's taught drama, puppetry, intergenerational arts to students of all ages and abilities in schools and community settings since 1974. Her passion is connecting generations, cultures, communities through the art of storytelling and performance, and she's been doing that for 20 years. She's a theater performer and director, and she led the Elders Share the Arts, ESTA's Intergenerational Living History Theater Program in Flushing, Queens, and she's also received the 2012 Flamekeeper Meritorious Service Award for Creativity, Leadership, and Outstanding Contributions to the Lives of Older People. She was one of the first trainers for the Time Slip Storytelling Project, which is a creative initiative for people with Alzheimer's disease and other forms of memory loss. And she's been involved with evaluating the 4 years of disaster relief program for the tsunami victims in Mumbai. And so welcome to Healthy Alternatives, Marcia.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to be here with you.
So what is Elders Share the Arts about?
Elders Share the Arts is a community arts organization, and the focus of Elders Share the Arts is linking generations, cultures, and communities through living history arts. Living history arts are arts that are based on the stories from our life experience. And Elders Share the Arts takes those stories in community settings and creates their expression through art forms, whether it be theater, visual arts, photography, writing, music, and the performances or exhibits are then given back to the community as a reflection of themselves.
So what got you involved with working in the elderly and theater arts and storytelling?
Well, theater arts came from... Where did it come from? I would say that theater arts came later in my life, like when I was around 30. I was living in Hawaii, Honolulu, and I had been working with people with disabilities and then moved to working in theater and got training. When I was in Hawaii, the people of Hawaii, whether they're Polynesian or of the Asian cultures that live there, they have a high heart and connection and respect and honoring of the elders in their lives. And I had a grandmother who I love very much in New York City, and I felt moved to move back from Hawaii to New York to be in her company before she left the planet. And at that time, I spent a lot of time at senior centers with her. And it was my time with them that led me to a creative drama program that was run through the Children's Museum of Manhattan. Someone gave a request that they were interested in doing some intergenerational work. And intergenerational work was not really in people's consciousness at that time. But for me, it was a perfect combination because it was a combination of creative drama and working with elders. And so,
I'm not sure intergenerational work is in people's consciousness is quite yet either. That's why we're talking about it, to make people more aware, I think.
Well, you know, then this is great that we're having this conversation for all to think about and consider, because where are we without our elders?
So when you're doing this intergenerational art, who's it actually benefiting?
Oh, my. It benefits everyone that's involved and everyone that's not involved. It benefits the youth. It benefits the elders who are participating, and it benefits the community that it's participating in. And if you believe in the pebble being thrown and creating ripples, that consciousness of one community spreads to others. And so I believe that it impacts everyone.
So how would you describe today the field of creativity and aging?
Well, the field of creativity and aging is really in its nascent stage. It's it, it's a baby in its own development. I would say that it started officially developing back in the about 10 years ago, and it really grew out of, for example, Elder Share the Arts is a pioneer in the field of creative aging because we've been doing the work for over 30 years. But the consciousness, again, there that word, the consciousness around that really didn't form into a professional field until the National Center for Creative Aging down in Washington, D.C., worked with Dr. Jean Cohen, a beautiful gerontologist, on the effects of creative programming on the well-being and health of older adults.
What did he find?
Well, he found, and forgive me, but I'll say he found out the big duh, I mean, which we already know, that creative engagement is life-giving. And it affected, it positively affected when elders, older adults were involved in creative programming. It positively affected their health. There was a downswing in depression, in isolation. They loved learning new skills and being socially engaged with others. There was even a downfall of falls, of ailments. Less falling, less visits to the doctor, and, you know, we might ask ourselves, why is that? Why is that that happened? Simply through creative engagement.
Yeah, from what I've seen with elders, when you, like, go into a nursing home, yeah. And it's kind of like they're stacked up like cordwood almost.
Yeah, they're holding
it. And that when you start bringing them out, there's a video that I saw on TV where they on YouTube where they had this elder guy who,
the music alive,
yeah,
inside,
yeah, yeah,
beautiful,
he's barely communicating, and then he starts to they start playing some music or talking about,
yeah,
music, and he's in about 30 seconds he's this totally different person.
He's alive, absolutely, you know. And I have worked through Elder Share the Arts. I've worked in nursing homes for considerably. And, you know, you walk in there and you could get the feeling of, oh, my God, this is so sad, or, oh, my God, this is so depressing. There's nothing happening here. But when you get people in a circle, or when you stimulate someone with music, who's there? Everyone in their whole lives is there, you know? I mean, these are people who have lived long lives. And in that living, there is great value. And there's really something to celebrate. And the field of creative aging says we have creativity with us from the cradle to the grave. So let's not forget the older adults, and let's not forget the effect that it has on us in our lives. And the health-giving, which can translate into less dollars, you know, for long-term care, and, you know, and also quality of life. So let's remember that. We have it. It's our given. Let's use it. Let's activate it.
Yeah, I think one of the errors we've made in this country with the concept of retirement was that you're retiring almost from life. Mm-hmm. And that what the baby boomers now are looking at are, yeah, retiring from a first career or whatever they're doing, but looking at what's really motivating to them in their hearts to do something else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to probably change the whole notion of aging and the creativity there. Would you agree?
Yes, I do. I know that the baby boomers are the ones, you know, we are the ones.
Mm-hmm.
That
me
are
too,
pushing.
By the way.
That are pushing, wanting greater creativity. You know, we want to, who are the people that we want to grow older with? And what's the society that we want to grow older in? You know, what senior center would we be motivated to go to? What needs to be happening in those senior centers for us to be drawn there? You know, actualize our lives.
First, they have to change the name senior center. If they want to attract us.
Well, you know, and why is it that we would have to change the name? Because why has it taken on a certain, why has the language and the quality taken on a certain level of unacceptability?
True. So why do you think the arts are such a powerful motivator for healthy living? What is it doing that gets people that motivated?
You know, I mean, I loved Dr. Gene Cohen. I loved working with him. We were Elder Share the Arts worked with him. He was such a deeply delightful person and a brilliant man. One of the things that I love that he said in his research about brain functioning and creativity is that creativity is like chocolate cake to the brain. It's like it excites us. You know, of course, I may be talking to chocolate lovers now, but in general...
And now all he has to do is change that to dark chocolate, and then he's really on the safe ground.
Perfect.
Yeah. So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you are listening to Healthy Alternatives, Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back with my guest, Marcia Gilden, in just a moment.
What I want to talk about is the lighting that's over your head. And if you're in an office, you're under cool white fluorescent tubes. If you're at home, you may be under light bulbs still. Those light bulbs simulate moonlight. What I want to talk about is full spectrum lighting that simulates the wavelength of sunlight. We've done research with clients, and we found late afternoon productivity levels soar when you just change the lighting. Late afternoon fatigue levels disappear. Late afternoon productivity levels go up. And headaches disappear just by swapping tubes and bulbs and even compact spirals now that can be full spectrum. If you'd like to learn more about that, go to my website, teplitz.com, click on products, and you'll see lighting products.
So my guest today is Marcia Gilden. She has been working with Elders Share the Arts based in Brooklyn, New York for many years. She teaches drama, puppetry, intergenerational arts to students of all ages and abilities. She is a theater performer and director. She's received the 2012 Flamekeeper Meritorious Service Award for creativity, leadership, and outstanding contributions to the lives of older people. In 2001, she became one of the first national trainers of the Time Slip Storytelling Project. It's a creative, innovative program for people with Alzheimer's disease and other forms of memory loss. And so we're talking about the whole notion of creativity and aging. And let's focus a little bit more on Elder Share the Arts and talk a little more about the perspective it brings to the field of this generational program that you were talking about earlier.
Okay, I'd be happy to. You know, Elder Share the Arts, at Elder Share the Arts, we work with well and frail elders, and we work in intergenerational settings. I've been working in intergenerational settings through Elder Share the Arts since 1997. And what's particular about the perspective of Elder Share the Arts in intergenerational work is that in bringing elders and youth together, it's a program form that's called reciprocal learning. In other words, there are a lot of different ways that the generations can be brought together, and you might be aware of mentoring programs, or you might be aware of friendly visitor programs where children and youth go to the houses to bring food or be companionship. But at Elder Share the Arts, reciprocal learning is about that. We're in this together. Both the youth are learning from the elders are learning from the youth, and together they're learning new skills that they each are benefiting from.
Can you give us a couple examples of what you'd be doing from your standpoint with the STA and bridging this gap?
At ESTA, the intergenerational program is about bringing history alive. In other words, in this living history arts, and I do theater, living history theater. So in a living history theater program, we're bringing, I've worked with fifth graders, I've worked with classes of high school students, but let's take, for example, the fifth graders. We bring a class together to the senior center, and they meet with one another, they get to know one another in terms of theater skills and theater games, and then they begin to share stories from life experience on a theme that has emerged out of that particular group. So, for example, a theme that emerged last year was the power of music in our lives. And so both the elders and the children were interviewing one another, learning oral history interviewing skills, and then interviewing one another on songs, on music that stood out to them in their lives, that was important to them in their lives, and then what the story of that time in their lives was when that song came into their lives. And so we build stories, we build the sharing of experience as we're building theater skills, and then we create an original theater piece based on what we have learned from one another. Everyone performs, that's 45 people on stage. Everyone performs in some way, and we perform at the school and at the senior center. It's just a tremendous learning experience, a tremendous bonding experience, a tremendous generating of community experience that comes out of the initial sharing of stories from life experience.
So how long does it take to go from when they first get together, the generations, to having this production show up?
There are a lot of different ways that you can create a performance piece. In the case of the Flushing program, it's 45 people, and it's a 20-week program. In other cases, depending on funding, which is always a reality check, maybe we have 10 or 12 sessions to do at a site, and then we would adjust what the final culminating product is, how we do a presentation, a performance, or how we do an exhibit to fit into that time element that we're working with.
So what impact have you seen then on the elders who are involved with this?
Oh my God! You're talking like you're talking to my heart.
Well, pour forth, lady.
It's like the elders are. I've seen such a range of involvement and engagement and delight, and fear turned into appreciation. The elders are everything and anything from very involved and committed. They really want to be there for the kids. I've had elders in the program who have been really depressed and in their homes, and they don't even know why they're coming into this program, and they don't even trust being there. And I've seen an evolution of appreciation and welcome and confidence building in relating to the children and in getting up on stage, which many of them have never done before. Not only have they never gotten up on stage, but I often hear from the elders, well, why would anyone want to listen to a story that I have to tell? And so getting over that and doing and creating relationships that are encouraging and assuring and welcoming brings us towards one another. I've seen elders who have memory loss and memory problem be so inspired by the kids that they're on stage with that they choose to memorize their lines, which they don't have to. I tell them, you don't have to. You can use your script. But no, they want to memorize their lines. So I've seen...
So somebody with memory loss is memorizing lines because it meant so much to them to do that.
Yes.
Wow, cool. Now, how is this impacting the kids who are involved with it?
You know, it's really lovely in that I go into the classroom beforehand. At ESTA, we do this process of meeting with the two groups separately before bringing them together. And in going into the classroom and asking the kids to brainstorm, just free associate on the word elder, aging, old. You know, we get these ideas and stereotypes and fears and assumptions out in the air. And then we reflect on elders that we know, that we have in our own lives who mean something to us. And we look at what those qualities are. So that then when the children come together, they've started from a certain place with a certain group of ideas in their mind and maybe in their heart from their own experience. And when we come together and they get to know the elders, they are surprised and they are excited. They become very considerate. They become very, like, this is my elder, you know, my elder Irving, my elder Doris. When they meet one another on the streets because they live in the same neighborhood, they introduce their families to one another. They find out that they're neighbors. And there's an attitude change and there's a love that develops that goes with them in their lives.
So I assume a part of the impact you're talking about, because you mentioned a little bit, is a bigger impact on the greater community as well. Is there a larger impact than just what you shared about them starting to meet on the streets?
You know, I'm coming back to that word consciousness that came up for us in our conversation at the beginning. And the larger impact is that our awareness, we have the possibility for our awareness to shift in relationship to one another. In the field of creative aging, in the field of intergenerational programming and intergenerational arts, There's the term a society for all ages, and that's what we're striving towards. That's what our awareness is making us work with. You know, how can we create, even in creating architecture, in urban planning, in how does our awareness of the inclusiveness of all ages, how do we bolster that? How do we bring that about? And so the larger community is our neighborhoods, is our societies, and is our minds. How do we bring about and activate a world or a community or a culture of caring that is inclusive of all ages?
Now, if somebody lives in New York, you guys are based there, but if somebody lives outside of New York, do they have options to hook up with folks that are doing what you're doing to find out if there are groups like yours?
Yes, yes, yes. Actually, the National Center for Creative Aging is a wonderful resource that has mobilized all of the practitioners in the field of creative aging. And so the NCCA, National Center for Creative Aging, and I believe their contact is www.creativeaging.org. They're a wonderful resource for finding out what is going on in your area, because there is work going on all over the country.
And for listeners who want to explore about the full scope of what Elders Share the Arts is doing, you can go to their website at www.estanyc.org, estanyc.org. They've got a newsletter you can sign up for. You can also follow them on Facebook. Marcia, thanks for being a guest today on Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you, Jerry.
My guest next week is going to be Dr. Mary Newport. Dr. Newport received an honors Bachelor of Arts degree from Xavier University. She graduated from University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. She trained as a pediatrics at Children's Hospital Medical Center in Cincinnati, and she's been the founder and medical director of the Newborn Intensive Care Unit at Spring Hill Regional Hospital, and she's practiced there as a member of the All Children's St. Johns Hopkins Specialty Physicians Group. What we're going to be talking about is an experience she had with her husband, Steve Newport. Steve came down with early onset Alzheimer's, and Mary became his caregiver. And what she discovered in researching this is a way of curing Alzheimer's. She's actually written a book called Alzheimer's Disease: What If There Was a Cure? And it's the story of ketones. She's actually been invited to lecture on the subject at the Alzheimer's Disease International Conference, and she's going to be sharing with us the story about her husband and what she used and how impactful it was. Keep in mind, Alzheimer's doesn't appear to have anything that can alleviate the symptoms, bring you back to normal. Well, Dr. Newport's going to share how you can do that. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.